You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 3rd of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we'll be chatting markets with Nick Kuntz. We've got Garnet Parkin, CEO of Brickhouse. They return from provisional liquidation and a JSC suspension. It's been a very long road for the company, but they're back trading on the JSC. And then former Rare from Cotton On, talking logistics of online retail. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines: MoneyWeb auto assessment for individual taxpayers kicks off. And from CNBC, Microsoft confirms talks to buy TikTok in the US. Morning markets, US was green on Friday night. S&P up 0.3%. NASDAQ again leading the way, up 1.5%. Asia mixed. Sydney was green but is now flat. And Tokyo, which has been lagging, up 2%. Commodities red across the board. The exception, gold, $1,980 an ounce. Rand, about 20-odd cents weaker, 30 cents weaker, 17.07 this morning. And top 40 opening call for a green open, about 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Garnet Parkin, and he's CEO of Brickhouse. Garnet, morning. Appreciate your time. You've been CEO since 2015. You took over from your late father. It's been a wild 5 years, I imagine, for you. The company provisionally liquidated in June 2013, came out of that in October 2015, now back trading on the JSE again. I imagine for you this has been a baptism of fire, and you're glad to get back to the core business of Brickhouse and put all this behind you.
A very good morning to you. Yes, we're very excited. Even with the national state of disaster that was declared a few months ago, we formed our disaster management team, and we're very excited about the future. Yeah. Our results were also released last week, and as you can see, there's an upward curve for us. We're very, very excited for the few years that lies ahead. And I'm sure we can add value for our shareholders.
I mean, primarily bricks and coal, your brick business been doing very well. I mean, obviously that hard lockdown, not so great, but since the lockdown, bricks been pretty much flying out. I mean, who do you supply to? Is it private individuals? Is it large construction? Who's your primary customer?
We sell to the general public, larger corporations. We sell to everyone. So the man on the street is also welcome to come and buy bricks from us. And to give you an idea, we manufacture in excess of 160 million bricks a year. So if you look at a truckload, it's 10,000 bricks. So it's quite a lot.
And I imagine one of the challenges with bricks is that, you know, they're heavy to move around, as you say, truckloads. So geographic to a degree, are you basically up in Gauteng? Because I mean, a truckload of bricks can't be economical to send down to Western Cape or Durban.
Doing the whole card thing, but also in Free State. And we have customers as far as Cape that come and collect books from us. We basically service the whole region. But very, very excited about what lies ahead for us. And I'm sure we can add value for our investors.
Yeah, I mean, bricks in themselves. I mean, what identifies? Is it around quality? Is it location? Is it style of bricks? I was having a look at your website.
Yeah.
And of course, aren't just bricks. There's all different types and colorings.
Yeah, what makes us so unique is we manufacture stock bricks, which is a plaster brick or clay, and we do cement-based bricks. So it's basically an SPA product. So if you see the old houses that need renovations and things like that, mm-hmm. We manufacture those cement-based bricks. It's a mixed brick, different colors and varieties, and we do all of those.
And in terms of, I'm imagining, obviously it's a clay product, but then I imagine that the second half of the brick is baking it. That's Eskom. Are you still on grid? What's your Eskom bill looking like? Because that must be one of your challenges.
To manufacture the raw brick, we're still on the Eskom lines, but to fire the brick, we use our coal in the firing processes as well. So, yeah, a bit of both, but we've been lucky so far, no Eskom power outages so far, but we do get them from time to time, but we work around the problem, and we make sure that our work in progress is always at the accepted levels.
You've also got a coal business that you're a joint venture. And, of course, coal carried on mining during hard lockdown. It is very much an essential service. We need coal. We need the power. What sort of coal are you mining? Are you exporting? Is it for local? Are you selling to Eskom?
It's local coal. We don't sell directly to Eskom. It's a lower-grade coal, which we sell on to people in the local communities. The boilers, hospitals, things like that, but they also sell on the buyers sell on to men to export Eskom everywhere, but we don't directly sell to Eskom.
And is it open cost or a mine?
We've got an open cost mine, and that's where we mine our clay, and then we get to our coal.
So Brickhorns itself, as I said, I mean, it was it way back in the day, it's provisional liquidation. I mean, this is really going way back and back from that. I mean, you essentially from all the bits and pieces, Brickhorn back and operating. And as you say, I mean, you're delivering a product, you're turning profits and working for the shareholders again. Life for Brickhorn back to normal.
Yes, back to normal, and you're looking towards the future.
No, it's been an amazing story. Congrats to you and your team. Best of luck for that future. That's Garnet Parkin. He is CEO of Brickhorn, trading back on the JSE after being suspended for over 7 years.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Fumare, he's from Cotton On. He's head Africa and Brazil supply chain at the Cotton On Group. Phil, morning, appreciate your time. I mean, one of the big trends, obviously, of the lockdown has been, excuse me, a move to online retail, including clothing, which I think a lot of people were perhaps a little bit slow to it. But this is really online retail. It becomes logistic operations. These aren't dark stores necessarily. These are warehouses, and when I say warehouse, I'm seriously underselling what those buildings are.
Good morning to you. It is, and it's enabled us to do what we love to do better, which is excellent. And we've always prided ourselves in how we serviced our retail stores, the traditional bricks and mortar. And we've enabled this in our supply chain through being simple, through our functions, and because we're wholly owned, we're colleagues with our retail partners, and we get to show the simplicity through our supply chain and deciding on the best and the best for both our brick stores and our customers by deciding or discussing what we think our customer wants best. So this transition into the newer world of what logistics or warehousing or supply chain looks like has been seamless. And it's probably enabled us to be one of the first movers in this space. We're continuously looking at ways to make it better and faster too, so realizing that we need to be on the front end of it is an exciting place.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine in some senses your bricks and mortars was always, there's a supply chain there as well, but it's a different process. You know, I walk into a brick and mortar store, I'm looking at what's available, I appreciate there's going to be some limitations due to you know, simple just space issues. In the online space, I imagine a customer's frankly probably more demanding. They're expecting the product there, they expect it in their size, and then truthfully they want it delivered in a day or two.
Sure, we our customers are demanding in that space, but we're happy to oblige with that demand. It's something that we hold close to our heart. We want to help her decide or help her let her shop where she wants to shop, how she wants to shop, and where she, or, and what she wants to shop. The service that we offer is very close to our hearts. In supply chain warehousing world, there will be exceptions, but we try not to let those get us down or affect our customers. She shouldn't have to worry about those. Partnering with the right vendors is really important to make sure that the hard work that we do within our four walls isn't dropped en route to the customer. It isn't always perfect. It is a warehouse. It is tough. But we make sure that we're able to break through those barriers, make it simple for the customer, blow their socks off with service, and continue to do so. We realize we're setting an example to our customers. So if you get a really good service from an order that you place, that's the expectation set. So that's an exciting place to be in. And we're always looking ways, as I said, to reduce lead times with some interesting things on the horizon. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I mean, and part of that trick, as you said, again, in the store, you've got all the touch points with your customer. You're in complete control of that process. And in the online environment, I mean, you can control the website, but the payment gateway is probably a third party. Delivery is going to be a third party. You've got to work a lot closer with sort of, you know, outside partners, because they're an important part of that ultimate journey for the customer.
Yeah, we were quite lucky early on. So we've only been around online 2.5 years. To pick a delivery partner who seemed aligned with our values and our proposition. So they've been really supportive in helping us execute, as you say, that vital last step and the only interface we get with our customer face to face, which is maybe even more complex these days. But you know, happy again, we've chosen that correct strategic partner. The touch and feel is a tough one, right? And it's that connectivity. But it's traditional connectivity that we see with our customer. There's some really amazing people who do amazing things with trying to get that touch and feel online. That's not really us. Mm-hmm. But we like to make sure that our site is, well, no, we like. We ensure that our site is merchandised correctly, that you can find what you want to shop, that the process online is easy. There's nothing worse than struggling to figure out where to hit the add to cart button or you know, things like that. So we're lucky that we've got a platform that's easy to use, easy to shop. And that's what the customer sees. And then back in the four walls, you know, when we get that order, it's all systems go to get it out the door and hand over to our delivery partner.
Bricks and mortar, obviously here to stay. Things are changing, and post-pandemic, it's going to, you know, be interesting to see how it all shakes up. But bricks and mortar not going away. Are there lessons that you could almost take from the online space and the logistical process and bring it back into the bricks and mortar business that actually make a more efficient and more enhancing brick and mortar experience?
Yeah, I think it's both as well. So, Cotton holds its customer first mentality really close to our hearts, and we try and weave it into the store. So how we merchandise our stores so that they're easy to shop and enable our customer to spot the fashion, see the value in the things that we sell, is weaved into our DNA. So we're never going to waver from that. But it is the other way too, as you explained. We get to drill down into data. So data in stores is always very hard to get to. But now we've got that data. We can see how she shops, when she shops, what promotional activity drives turnover. So we're getting valuable insights into product success as well by sort of test and respond tools, and we can see how people appreciate new styles. And obviously that data set is getting bigger and bigger, the bigger our market share gets, which is excellent for us. Yeah. And our customers.
Big data for Murray. He's a head Africa Brazil supply chain at the Cotton On Group. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhuis, he's founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate your time this morning. You do an update every Sunday. You look at a bunch of charts. The one that you've got there is the top 40. I was looking at it too. It's been pretty much range bound for a couple of weeks, maybe a little bit more. Gave us a fake breakout on Wednesday. Caught me. Your take on this? I mean, it's basically gone back in. We're waiting for the market to decide whether it wants to move higher, break up, or move lower, break down.
Good afternoon. Sorry, this is pre-programmed. Yeah? Good morning. I'm not used to being up this early, but yeah. So it's interesting because, as you say, it has been sort of in the range for some time. I think it's kind of been mirroring the S&P 500. We had a relatively strong day on the S&P, which Thursday, Friday was reversed. It was a bit of an interesting, actually, week. You know, it was interesting to see that we actually ended up very strongly on Friday in the U.S., and, you know, our market obviously never had the opportunity to have that upward move. So we ended the week at the bottom end of that range. And I suppose the expectation would have been for us to follow the S&P primarily. Mm-hmm. And if you look at our market, sort of how we closed on Friday, we closed right at the low of that range. And the S&P ended up closing at the upper end of its range. So I would think that we'd probably trade to the top of the range again, you know, at least today or tomorrow over the next 2 days. But like you say, we had a fake break on Wednesday. It looked like it was sort of breaking out higher. The bias, I think we said the week before, was that the bias is towards the short side. So the long break was that faked out. Luckily, it didn't catch us, but... yeah, it's been a little frustrating, I think, with our market, because we kind of feel like we've been left behind. But if you also put that into context, we've had a proper V-shaped recovery, right?
Yeah.
So the question is now, you know, allow the market time to dictate to you which direction it wants to go. From a trending perspective, it does look somewhat bullish. But I think from a shorter-term perspective, you know, it's run pretty hard over the last couple of months to make it all the way back up to the highs. The question is, you know, like you say, where to from here? I think that for us, the easier solution really, instead of trying to make all sorts of fancy predictions, is to just allow the market to show us. So I think if we have another attempt at the upper end of the range, is what, 52,000 on the top 40 index? If we have another attempt at that, we managed to close about 52,000, then, you know, it does seem as though the market is wanting to go higher. And then you follow it, right?
Yeah, no, look, and it caught me on Wednesday. I thought there was a break. Turned out it wasn't, but cut the losses and back into the range. Aspen is a stock that certainly has broken, and indications are, looks like it's heading south. This has been a really great run up to, what, 165 back in sort of early mid-June, but going weaker, making new lows since the recovery, and frankly, looking weak and looking for more downside. You say potentially as much as 100, going down to another 100 bucks.
Yeah, so that's actually just a very long-term range that it's been trading, more of a channel line, mm-hmm. really, that it's been trading in since, I think, about 12 months now. And it seems as though it's made a bit of a rounding top around the upper end of the band that it's been trading in. And obviously this is an upward slanting sort of range, if you will call it that. And if we see sort of a move back down to the bottom end of this upper dancing range, and that target's around 100. Now, the more time passes, the higher this target price comes, because the supporting trend line obviously slopes up, mm-hmm. right? So somewhere between 100 and 110, 105, you know, if the market was to drop today, that would be the target. We used 135.50 as a sort of a trigger level, because that's kind of where the gap level was as well. It left a gap, I think it was back in... March 2019, early mid-March 2019, it left quite a bit of a gap on the back of some fundamental news. And that gap, sort of upper end of that gap range, was 135.50. So we're using that as a trigger level to say, like, look, you know, below this level, we've got a confirmed short signal. From a momentum perspective, everything is sort of looking like the stock is wanting to roll over. So with the rounding top, it closed below that sort of trigger level, and, you know, rejecting the upper end of that consolidation range, it does seem as though the stock wants to come a bit lower down.
Yeah.
No, it's something to happen. You know, this is a slightly longer-term view. This is going to take maybe a month or two, maybe 3 months.
Yeah. No, that's another one that caught my eye, and it certainly had a spectacular run, looking like coming back. Petri Radenhuis, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate your time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast every morning from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social media, hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie Concordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.